Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Farmer, today joined by Ricardo Teixeira. Welcome back, everyone. There are some things to talk about, lots of things going on internationally, South African politics, some things going on, some of them important, some of them not so important. I think today, though, we're going to focus just on one story that's been brewing over the past week, and Ricardo is very knowledgeable and has been doing lots of media on this particular story. So what we're going to be talking about today is these naval exercises that South Africa had alongside Iran, Russia, China, the UAE, and some other countries. Just to sort of start off the story, South Africa has this planned naval exercise with supposedly under the auspices of BRICS. The exercise was being hosted by China, but for quote-unquote logistical reasons, was being hosted in South Africa's waters. This is according to the reporting. I don't know if that actually makes sense, but whatever. The naval ships from China, Russia, the UAE, and Iran were all supposed to be participating. Now, apparently, kind of at the last minute, just before the naval exercises were supposed to start, reporting suggests that Ramaphosa was told by the U.S. embassy that Iran's participation in such a thing would be a bit of an issue. Now, I know that no one seems to care about morality and geopolitics anymore, if they ever did. But it's also, I think, consequential right now that in recent days, Iran has probably killed between 2,000 and 12,000 protesters in a series of brutal crackdowns while the internet has been shut off in Iran. I believe the internet's beginning to slowly return now after the protests were essentially brutally repressed. So that was going to be happening. That happened just as this naval exercise was going on. The naval exercise was apparently going to reflect badly on our relationship with Washington. So Ramaphosa asked the defense minister, Angie Motshekga, if she could ask them to ask Iran to, you know, take an observer role and not be so obviously involved. However, it seems that the naval exercise went ahead anyway. The navies of Ethiopia, Egypt, and Indonesia observed while the UAE, China, Iran, and Russia took part. It then became apparent that Iran, despite being asked to leave apparently by the presidency, went through with the entire exercise. This has seen the defense minister, Motshekga, say that she's going to be holding an inquiry into exactly why that happened, despite the fact that the presidency was going ahead, just said that Iran mustn't take part, and that a board of inquiry would be created, and I think was supposed to report back in 7 days about Ramaphosa's instructions, which were, quote, clearly communicated to all parties concerned, agreed upon and implemented and adhered to as such, was not obeyed. All of this did not go unnoticed by the U.S. The U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee Senator Jim Risch, chair, said that South Africa's ANC-led government foreign policy hides behind a claim of non-alignment, yet its military host drills with America's chief adversaries. The House Foreign Affairs Committee majority Twitter account also, X account, attacked us, saying that South Africa continues to give the United States the middle finger, training China, handing over NATO secrets, and undermining U.S. national security. They will quickly find out they are on the losing side between the U.S. and China. Ricardo, did I get all the details right there? What exactly happened here? Did the military go rogue, I guess, is the question.
What we have seen here, in my opinion, is a level of insubordination that if it had occurred in any other democracy, heads would roll. The minister, let's start from the beginning. They called this exercise World for Peace. Iran kicked off the new year by killing protesters. China kicked off the new year by exercising an invasion of Taiwan, and Russia kicked off the new year by having one of their shadow fleet vessels seized for damaging undersea infrastructure in the Baltics.
Right. Doesn't and sound also, like, you know, the ongoing invasion in Ukraine.
Just aside from that, if we just look at what else was occurring in the lead up to the exercise, aside from the, you know, funding of proxies in the Middle East that are attacking shipping lanes, violating maritime security norms and challenging maritime boundaries in the Philippines, and of course the invasion of Ukraine. If we put those aside and we just look at what the other three countries are doing in the beginning of the year, it doesn't seem like countries that have a will for peace, in my opinion. Secondly, what was there in the beginning to actually learn from these countries? China, the PLA or PLAN, 70% of their fleet were built after 2010. So about 70% of their fleet is under 15 years old, have not been involved. In fact, if we go back to just within my lifetime, before I was born, China had a brown water navy and were confined to not even littorals, but inland waters. They couldn't even do green water areas. So they're still not a blue water navy. Okay, Iran had a third or roughly a third to a half of their navy destroyed in one day in the 80s in a war with the US in Operation Praying Mantis and have never recovered. Russia has lost the war of the Black Sea to a country that doesn't have a navy. What was there to learn from these countries in the realm of...
Right. And beyond that, I mean, the UAE is the only one that would be doing, I guess, similar-ish things to our navy, you know, sort of protecting the coast and doing patrols and stuff like that, right? Because China's got these global ambitions, you know, Russia
but,
has
but this global capabilities as well.
Right, right. But the ambition is there, right? They want to be doing these big naval exercises and places. South Africa's navy is a far more focused, small thing that's just supposed to protect our shores, patrol them, you know, catch poachers and deter pirates and that sort of thing. So, you know, it does seem weird, particularly when other major BRICS nations, such as India, are not participating, which makes the claim, I think, that this is a quote-unquote BRICS exercise a little bit thin. But anyway, I digress.
Yeah, and India put out a statement saying that this was not a BRICS initiative, that BRICS does not have military frameworks under it. For even though BRICS is a very loose cooperation framework, the premise for maritime cooperation it does not exist under BRICS because India does not exercise with China. That is a principle. They see them as a near peer and as a competitor, and they will not exercise with them. Brazil as well has been silent on this. They apparently were Brazilian observers. There was a Brazilian flag flying. I understand none of the Brazilian attachés that are based in Pretoria were there. So I don't know the extent to which there were Brazilian observers. But what's clear here is that from the get-go, the premise for what this exercise was about was a cover-up. In my opinion, this exercise was about nothing more than political theater, meant to show that China has sway. China organized, China planned, and China invited all the countries, including Iran. In fact, the SANDF and the South African government tried to defer on that point about why Iran was there, saying, whoa, China invited them, not us. But we need to accept some responsibility because we hosted. And by hosting, we welcome those countries into our waters. And then to have the president say, okay, y'all need to go away and like not be here. And I believe the options that were given to Iran were to stay in port or to leave. And they chose option C, which was not presented to them in that they were just going to hang off on the coast and observe. I think a big thing there as well is they wanted to insulate the – Iran had three vessels. Two of those vessels, the larger ones, which are glorified tankers, in my opinion. They don't have a single missile between them, and they are just converted tanker ships that have a habit of leaking oil. They belong to the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, whose sole purpose is to preserve the regime. Now, the museum piece corvette that was there, the Nagi, belongs to the actual Iranian Navy. And I think part of why they hung off on the coast, we need to remember that what's happening in Iran and what's happening here are not happening in isolated events, that there is some connection here. History doesn't happen in a microcosm, and neither does current affairs. And there was, in my opinion, some sort of an attempt to insulate the Iranian sailors on that vessel from what was actually happening in Iran, because the IRGC and the vessels that they were on, they're able to control internet access on those ships. So to keep them at sea, away from access to the internet and news, and to kind of still shore up the Iranian flag and say, look, we're here exercising, we're doing something, but we're not leaving and we're not observing.
Yeah,
we're not
even as we're challenged at home, we have friends abroad kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's very clear that all of this is about political messaging. Now, what did South Africa gain from this? And friend of mine, Dean Wingren, did point out that we have very few opportunities to go to sea due to the ever-decreasing defense budget. So there was that. Our sailors had a chance to go to sea, which is, you know, any chance is a good chance. But I think this is a gift horse where we should have looked it in the mouth. But aside from that, South Africa didn't win here. I think our international credibility has taken a serious knock. China has come away looking like, you know, they're a bit of a global hegemon, that they can pull off these exercises wherever they want and people will just follow their lead. Weirdly, Russia kind of floated by in the background, and aside from the fact that they sent a relatively new corvette, there's not much really to say about Russia, other than the fact that, yeah, they're still engaged in an illegal invasion of their neighbor and don't care about peace. But South Africa lost here, and it's very clear. And we know that the president communicated an order. We don't know what that order was. We know it was communicated to the minister. We don't know who she communicated it to, or how she communicated it, or when she communicated it. And whoever and whenever it was communicated, was it then carried out, relayed, and followed up on? We don't know. But to call on a board of inquiry, I think, is a bit strange, because it means they'll have to call in the person who gave the order, who in this case is the president. And the people being investigated by the board of inquiry are also going to be overseeing the board of inquiry, because they're the chief sub-branch of services and the chief of the defense force. So I think that's a bit of a snub of, oh, we're going to look into it, but not.
It does seem like one of these things. I mean, look, you know, at least giving a date of saying, oh, 7 days or something is not as bad as just leaving it open-ended. Although, you know, just because there's a date doesn't mean that it'll actually happen. I mean, we've seen this so many times where delay, or we couldn't get it together.
Was the commission supposed to be 60 days?
Yes. You know, it was supposed to put out the report, and then the report was delayed. The whole commission was delayed. So, you know, even that deadline is I think, not to be taken seriously. This really does seem like there's going to be some sort of, I wouldn't put much stock in that inquiry anyway, as you say. And, you know, the question here is, I mean, is our military conducting an entirely separate foreign policy? This, of course, comes in the context of a story we talked about last year with our head of our defense force on the military side went off to Iran and was reported in Iranian state media as declaring that we were, I can't remember the exact phrase, it was something like,
we stand with the peace-loving people of Iran.
Yes, basically that we were aligned with them in every sort of way.
Yeah, those peace-loving people in Iran are being shot by their government right now.
Right. So, you know, that was apparently also against the wishes of the presidency. So, you know, if the military is going rogue, this is not like a sort of a small thing. It's not just, oh, it's another department, or, oh, another internal ANC thing where, you know, different factions of the party are listening to each other. We start to see a really, you know, this is a very dangerous position to be in. In no country can the military act without the express control of the civilian government, or else you begin to be at risk of things like military juntas and coups and that sort of thing. No, I don't think we're there yet, but there are some, you know, worrying things that might indicate that stuff is not entirely impossible. Infamously last year, and I think we did also talk about this on the show, Afrobarometer had some polling which said that while in 2011, only 16% of South Africans said that they supported military rule as an alternative to govern the country, that number is now 49%, just shy of an absolute majority, which is not great. And we've also seen a lot of military coups pulled off in Africa relatively recently. And just because the defense force is, I think, quite weak and underfunded doesn't mean that you can't pull off a coup and arrest a lot of senior politicians, that sort of thing. So I don't know, Ricardo, is that something we should even be talking about? Do you think I'm overhyping that fear?
Look, I think there is the fear of it, and it's a warranted fear, specifically considering the current behavior of the Defense Forces higher-ups and the fact that the public seems to support the idea. I also think that if we look at that number, I mean, roughly 70% of South Africans are under the age of 35, which means they probably don't remember the old government and the time before democracy. And I think people think the idea of living under a strong man is grand and all, but people don't remember. I think people have already started to forget what it was like before democracy, and that it wasn't a good time for most people. Unless you are running the state in that sort of environment, you're not going to be having a good time.
Right. I also think the propaganda being put out by the regime in Burkina Faso about how great, you know, how great the military dictatorship there is, has been going viral across a lot of African countries. I think that's also contributing perhaps to this number. But I also think it's partly just South Africans are so irritated with the current state of affairs that when you offer them an alternative, people start to sort of say, maybe that's a good idea.
People want radical
Right, exactly. People are beginning to look for more radical options. And that's why, you know, our politics is changing at the moment in interesting ways, is because of that dissatisfaction. But, you know, once the door to that willingness for change opens, you know, people start to consider things that would be considered impossible before. And I think that's why it's important to keep an eye on this stuff. You mentioned that there's a piece in the Daily Maverick today. I think it's the headline that everyone involved should be fired.
Yeah.
And Peter that sounds reasonable to me.
Yeah, Peter Fabricius has put this piece out, and I'm in full agreement with him, who says, he starts it off here with Defense Minister Andy Motsekga, SANDF Chief General Rudzani Maponya, SANDF Chief of Joint Operations Lieutenant General Sipiwe Lucky Sangweni, and SA Navy Chief Vice Admiral Mondo Lubise should all be fired for last week's fiasco. And I fully agree with him. I mean, we've seen already, it's been more public with Maponya, what his visits to Iran and trying to chart the military's own foreign policy. And notably, the military does have its own form of foreign policy. They do have a sector called Defense Foreign Relations, which handles the deployment of attachés and attachés deployed to South Africa. But they're supposed to work with DOCA, but they don't have offices that are shared. In fact, I don't think there's much communication between the two these days. But we've seen how the chief is trying to craft his own foreign policy. We've seen how the chief of the Navy also calls upon Iran and Libya and Cuba and calls them friends. And we've seen, I mean, not as publicly, but if you, like me, and you follow the parliamentary track for defense oversight, General Sangweni has had some serious words with the standing committee. They've gotten into some serious shouting matches in closed doors and in public hearings. The man has the leadership capacity of a wet biscuit, in my opinion. He got booed by about 2,000 troops that came back from the DRC when they had the briefing for those that returned at the Brooke Mobilization Center. For a general to be booed by 2,000 soldiers, I think says a lot. And I think the handling, if we go back to the Second Battle of Goma, from that to now, there's just been one crisis after another with compounding effects in the military with zero accountability and zero consequences. And I
maybe
think
that's why we're not going to have a coup, because the soldiers just won't follow what their officers tell them to do.
Genuinely, that's my belief. I think if the general tried to pull off a coup, I can guarantee you to some extent the majority of soldiers won't follow through on that order. I think the discontent between the rank and file towards their superiors is growing about as fast as the rift between the higher-ups and civilian oversight. And I think the higher-ups living in their houses in Waterkloof think much highly of themselves than I think the troops think of them. We need some serious consequences here, because we've got generals that are just failing upwards, and we've got a minister who does not have the best track record in her previous portfolio and then came into this portfolio with absolutely zero understanding about the gravity and the complexity of this portfolio, and even admitted during her speech at Lahatla at exercise Vukushlome 4 that she didn't realize that there was a difference between defense force and army. She thought the terms were interchangeable. And that's quite a serious indictment there, to not know the difference between an army and a defense force. And she just does not seem to take her situation and her portfolio seriously. And we need someone that does. And I'm in full agreement with Peter Fabricius on this. I think some heads need a roll. We need some serious leadership changes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, accountability is a rare creature in South Africa, South African politics, and that's this is an important area for it. I think it also speaks in the sort of larger political context to how South Africa is in this wretched position. Maybe we did tell the Iranians to, you know, keep a low profile, and that they just asked the Chinese whether they could ignore us, and then did. and there was nothing we could do about it. Maybe the army is doing its own thing, or maybe Mocheja is doing her own thing, in which case the president has become sort of a powerless figurehead. And, you know, as we sort of alluded to at the beginning, these exercises don't really do much to help our defense. I mean, they don't actually, you know, these are not navies for the most part that we can learn from. Probably we could learn something from the Chinese Navy, I suppose, because they've got all that fancy new shiny tech in their new.
It doesn't work. That's a question.
Well, yeah, that's a separate and much more complicated question. But, you know, maybe you can learn something there. I have no idea what the UAE's navy is like, but I presume you could maybe learn something from it.
The UAE ship is the one I'm most impressed with. I mean, the Chinese ship was large and impressive, but the UAE ship is a French-built Govind-class corvette, quite a recently built and quite fancy ship. I don't think we could afford it, but, you know, that's a beautiful ship. The Chinese ship as well is, you can see they've copied some other people's homework there. You got some influence from American ship design and some European ship designs as well, but that was quite an impressive ship. And then, of course, you know, the Iranians had their museum pieces here and their glorified tankers.
Exactly, right? What we did was that the government's apparent stated foreign policy, which I think everyone recognizes as clearly a joke of non-alignment, is you know, being proven to be just, this was further evidence that's a complete nonsense. And now what, maybe we're going to get more concrete things passed against us by the US Houses of Congress. I think there's been this sort of idea that, oh, well, you know, once Trump is no longer president in a couple years' time, everything will just go back to normal with the Americans. But it's because of things like this that's exactly not what's going to happen. The U.S. may pass more things to hurt us. I hope they don't, because that will be bad for South Africans. But we have brought this on ourselves through stupid foreign policy decisions, because the ANC's ideological project and desire to show ideological solidarity with the worst countries in the world is overriding everything else. You know, maybe there's a diplomatic argument to say we can do naval exercises with China. I don't think that's a good idea, but at least, like, I can understand where that's coming from. But I've once yet you to include see a country like, yeah, right.
I have yet
but
to
once
see
you include a country like that. Iran, you really have just exposed that either you are being manipulated by countries like China to do what they want, or you've just completely lost the plot. So that's why we're spending today talking about this story, because I'm sure the scandals, the oncoming scandals of this year, as I'm sure there will be many, will pass us on the news soon. But this is a pretty big indictment. Right, exactly. It's first scandal of the year. This is an indictment of our foreign policy position, our defense force, the president's authority, and our capabilities, I think, just in general.
We're seeing here the danger of conflating the ANC's foreign policy with South Africa's foreign policy. I think the ANC is still running the show as if they won a majority. And I think it's plain to see now that, you know, they did not win a majority. They shouldn't be making these decisions. Their non-aligned stance and their foreign policy views do not reflect the views of the majority of South Africans. Otherwise, the majority of South Africans would have voted for them.
Indeed. Although, that being said, in Parliament, support for all those regimes has probably got a majority, to include the EFF and MK, whose foreign policies are like the ANC's, but less subtle.
We've seen Zuma's letter to the Russian defense minister about the MK guys that are stuck there. We've seen that Zuma somehow believes that Russia and MK have some sort of common cause. What exactly that is, I would love to know.
We've also seen that apparently didn't seem to get it much. So I'm not sure. You know, we keep trying to be friendly with these regimes, with China, with Russia, with Iran, and we don't really seem to be getting a lot for it. We just seem to be used as a prop to make them look good.
They don't seem to be very friendly to us.
Exactly. I don't see China, bringing in huge pallets of money to compensate us for the damage that U.S. tariffs are doing to us, despite how much we we suck up to them, which is just, you know, shows how silly this foreign policy is. We're just not getting anything out of it. Never mind the moral stuff, which is atrocious, as we mentioned at the beginning. But this is just not doing anything for South Africans.
What are we getting out of this? We're getting our market flooded by Chinese goods. When China's not buying anything from us, they're just flooding us and destroying any sort of local competition. We got that happening. Iran isn't even a top 30 trade partner. Russia isn't even a top 20 trade partner. And yet we're annoying the actual trade partners that are buying things from us, that are investing in us. And for what? And I don't know, someone wrote it that I saw recently, and I can't remember who, but they said that the ANC's foreign policy can be summed up as siding and protecting those who stood for them, who stood with them during the liberation struggle, regardless of how bad they are today. And a big part of that is conflating the USSR and what they did with modern Russia, because Russia does not get to...
I don't think it's even that straightforward. I don't think it's even that complicated. I think it's just America bad.
Yeah, America bad, everyone else good, regardless of how bad everyone else actually is.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter whether you think America bad or not. The point is, if that's your entire worldview, if America bad is the only pole by which you base your entire worldview, then you are going to come up with idiotic plans like this one. Anyway, much more to talk about over what's happened. We've got a new national prosecuting authority head who seems more like he's going to just be there for a little while. We've got a big fight going on in the DA that started last year but has only been getting nasty and bigger. So we'll be covering stories like that and other things that have been going on in the news over the next year. So please do join us for all of that. Welcome back, everyone, and we look forward to seeing you for the rest of the year. Of course, it's local government elections this year, so it's going to be a fun one. Anyway.
And on a closing note, don't forget, SAP's liability claims are about to outweigh the entire defense budget. So be safe out there, folks.
That's just depressing. Anyway, on that note, cheers, everyone. We'll see you all tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Bye-bye.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.